setting cardiac arrest expectations, no more car accident death announcement, paramedics at risk for assault, and we'll have a great interview with a pair of EMS and healthcare authors who wrote the novel Post Grid. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is The MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the PodMedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome you and thank you for checking out this week's show. In this week's EMS news items, we're going to be taking a look at an interesting article I found on setting your community's cardiac arrest survival expectations before you go on that cardiac arrest call. Can we get the community to understand what the real statistics are? Then, in this week's special tip segment interview, I have married authors Tony and Nancy Martineau on the show to talk about their novel, Post Grid, which includes a realistic look at EMS-style care after a civilization-threatening worldwide event. Could you maintain good medical care after the apocalypse? Well, we'll find out about that later on in the show, after the news. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure you're doing a couple of things. You need to check out the links and additional information that you can find over at the MedicCast blog at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. You can click that, and it'll take you right to the most recent episode of the recent week, or you can scroll down and find other previous episodes. If you're looking for something in particular, there's a search box in the upper right-hand corner, so you can search for particular keywords and terms. Take some time, though, and follow up on what I talk about in the show each week and make sure you understand how you can apply it or not apply it to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you do want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. You can always email me directly at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me an email with your comments and questions on the shows, or you can send me suggestions and interview ideas for future episodes. Either way, I do work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I will get back to you as well, so please keep those emails coming. Also, I'll be recording interviews in the physio control booth at EMS Today this week, so if you're at EMS Today in Baltimore, I want to meet you, so come by and say hi, and check out the amazing EMS patient care tools from Physio while you're there in their booth. I look forward to seeing you. Make sure you stop up and say hi to me between interviews. That's it. We'll be going ahead and getting on into the rest of the show with the news coming up in just a sec. Kicking off our news for EMTs and paramedics this week, I have an interesting column from the British newspaper site TheGuardian.com. The author proposes educating the public about the real statistics of cardiac arrest survival so that they know what to expect when a loved one suddenly collapses and EMS shows up. The doctor wrote the article, and I found that it was a good look at what's going on in their health service in the UK and reflects things here in the US as well. He talks about the media and television and how it's created an unrealistic expectation in our communities about how many people can survive a cardiac arrest. This puts additional stresses on everyone involved in the scene, the providers, the family, the staff at the hospital, everybody. So it really is something that we need to pay attention to. He also talks about the brutal nature of chest compressions and the traumatic effect this has, not only on the patient, but also on those providing chest compressions and even bystanders watching the event. He makes the case for educating our public on what we do and how we do it. Now, I've talked about this on the MedicCast here many times before this over the years. We have to do a good job of teaching our patients and their families what to expect when we arrive in their homes from the time they call 911 until they get to the hospital and even beyond. This public outreach makes everyone's job easier and soothes those situations where misunderstandings do occur. Now, I urge you to read this article for yourself and maybe even link to it on your service's website for the public to find and read. It'll go a long way to setting a realistic expectation on what we can do and can't do with resuscitation. You'll find a link to this over at the MedicCast site at mediccast.com/blog in the show notes for this article, so you can check it out. And I do urge you to link to it in your services site. Next up is an interesting side article that has some relationship to what we do in EMS. An auto manufacturer, Volvo, has made a shocking pledge regarding the safety of their cars that I think defines the changes of what we'll be doing in the coming years in EMS when it thinks about car accidents. The engineers who design and build Volvos announced that by the year 2020, no one involved in an accident in a new Volvo car or SUV will die from injury sustained in that accident. Now, this sounds pretty bold on the face of it, but when you start thinking about the average car accident these days, well, you begin to see where they're going with this pledge. For those of us who've been around for a while, well, we've seen the accidents of twisted metal and ruined bodies in the past that are lingering in our minds, but when we think about when was the last time you had one of those, well, you may only get one or two of those a year nowadays. The fact is, modern automobiles are designed to be much safer for the occupants than ever before. With crumple zones, airbags, collapsing frame components, the passenger compartments have become the safest place to be in the event of a car accident for properly restrained drivers and passengers. Now, if you add in smart car technologies that are coming out on the market now, where cars actually recognize hazards the driver doesn't see and stops the car for them or even avoids them, then cars begin to drive themselves, and we take human error factors out of the car accidents, and this reduces the rate of accidents and saves even more lives. So I don't think that Volvo is actually out of line with this pledge, and I'm surprised that other auto manufacturers haven't reached out and echoed it. The time is fast approaching where we're going to all do this accident thing where we cut passengers out of the twisted wreckage and they just walk safely away without maybe more than a scrape or a bruise. What do you think? Am I way off base here? Shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com or leave a comment on this article over at mediccast.com/blog. I look forward to hearing from you and getting your opinion. Finally, in our news for EMTs and paramedics this week, there's a look at the relative dangers of our jobs as first responders when compared to others in the field. I found an article out of Drexel University near Philadelphia that talks about the ways paramedics' jobs compare to people like firefighters in safety on the job. Researchers from Drexel's Dornsife School of Public Health found that EMTs and paramedics are much more likely to be assaulted while on their job than firefighters. This risk of violent injury is 14 times more likely for the EMS providers, and this is compared to the firefighters they work next to. The information came from a comparison between the stats from FEMA injury research and also interviews with paramedics and firefighters in and around the Philadelphia area. The assaults actually are not often reported, and an injured EMS provider often treats themselves or treats their friends, and they don't seek treatment through work the way most people would for a work-related injury. The authors cite a lack of training in self-defense and conflict resolution for EMS providers to help them avoid injury or safely defend themselves in these encounters. Now, one issue that was found that could be better available is better use of dispatch and dispatch's recognition when there's a scene safety issue and getting help to the scene. This delay in sending help increases the risk of a situation where it causes injury to the paramedics or EMTs on the scene. Now, I talk about scene safety here all the time. Part of scene safety comes even after the scene and after it's become unsafe. You have to report injuries that are caused to you at work and seek appropriate treatment. Authorities should be notified when it's appropriate to file criminal charges if needed to address individuals who want to use us as punching bags. So take the opportunity to report these situations and record their frequency to show the need that we need more training in safety and self-defense. It's up to you to move this issue forward so that people will pay more attention to it, and that starts with reporting issues when they arise. The authors of PostGrid, Tony and Nancy Martineau, met while they were in college when they were both working in an ambulance service in the Phoenix metro area. Now, they've been married for almost 30 years. Nancy is a former EMT and now a nurse specializing in emergency and pre-hospital medicine. Tony is a former deputy U.S. Marshal and a flight paramedic who continues to work in law enforcement and as a wildfire line medic. Together, they decided to take their passion for search and rescue and medical care and disaster preparedness to write their post-apocalyptic novel about a nurse finding her way after the electrical grid collapses. I got the chance to interview the couple and talk with them about their healthcare experiences and how these experiences influence the way they tell their stories in the novel. Check it out, and you can get this novel over at Amazon.com. There'll be a link in the show notes, so check it out. Tony and Nancy, it's great to have you here on the show, and we're going to be talking about your book, Post-Grid, and I'm really looking forward to chatting about this. It's very interesting. I kind of like reading post-apocalyptic adventures and science fiction and things like that. My own novels are based in a science fiction fantasy background as well, so that's my wheelhouse, and I'm really excited to chat with both of you about this particular book.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So let's start off, and maybe Nancy, you can go first. Tell us a little bit about your background. I know you're a nurse, but you've done some EMS work as well, and you can tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Tony and I met driving the ambulance. We were partners as EMTs. Tony was finishing his degree in law enforcement, and I had started nursing school. And we continued to do volunteer fire department, and then we moved back to Arizona, but we went into medical rescue with the sheriff's department and did medical rescue, search and rescue. And then when our girls, 13 years later, got old enough to do search and rescue, we went over to Civil Air Patrol. And Tony was cadet commander. And that means that we were in charge. Well, he was in charge, and then being the wife and the first lieutenant, I was right alongside. And we taught the kids navigation, survival, medical, all that type of thing.
So, and Nancy left out that she actually was an EMT at age 16 in North Carolina.
Excellent.
She started in the volunteer rescue squad as well as the volunteer fire department. So she started in the field.
When back then, you could join the rural rescue squad at 15, but you couldn't run calls till you had your EMT and were 16.
That's the same way it is here in Maryland, actually. And, I'm a member of my local volunteer company as a paramedic and started out there as an EMT and actually as an aide running calls just as a third on the ambulance to help, do whatever needed to be done while the providers took care of care. So I've worked my way up through the ranks, too. I know how it works. Nancy, you also have some ER background as a nurse as well.
Oh, yeah, I did ER most of my career, which is still, I'm still in nursing, but I'm just doing endoscopy. Probably going to be starting an ACLS PALS instructor here in the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
But, I've done ER and obstetrics and critical care transport.
Imaging.
Yep, 30 years.
OB.
Wow. And Tony, you have a law enforcement background, but you've also been a flight medic. You were an EMT, as you said. You guys have just a varied background. I really love how many different things involved with first response you guys have been involved with, search and rescue, law enforcement, nursing in the ER, ambulance providers, all the areas, really.
Yeah, short attention spans. I started both in law enforcement and as an EMT kind of simultaneously at the same time. So when I was in college, I went ahead and took an EMT class, assuming that I was going into law enforcement, and I'd always been fascinated with that sort of thing. So after college, I became a deputy United States Marshal, and I did that for about 5 years. And along with that, I was the one that had the EMT bag. So I was what would now be the SWAT medic, mm-hmm. but that was before we said things like that.
Yep.
and then through time, I went ahead and became an intermediate EMT at various points, and a paramedic. Originally, when I was a paramedic, we were living in Washington at the time, and I worked on the ambulance there, and it was a great place to do that. It was a very small county. There were just 20 paramedics in the county, and so we had very close supervision, which meant that we got a lot of ability to do things. We had pretty much a carte blanche, so that was really nice, a good place to learn. So in addition to in town, we had a lot of rural and even wilderness-type response. I think the longest call I went on was a 2.5 hour call to get up to the top of Mount Hood.
Wow.
So, well, excuse me, not Mount Hood. Was it?
Mount St. Helens.
Mount St. Helens. Oh, wow. There we go. And so it was a good place to learn. There's no better way to be a paramedic than to be thrown in the back and say, by the way, you're the only paramedic showing up on this call. You better know how to get through it.
A little bit of a gut check there.
Yeah. So that was good. And then from there, I have worked as a flight paramedic, did that for about 5 years here in the Phoenix area. A lot of fun. Again, back to the wilderness stuff, Nancy mentioned that we were members of the medical rescue posse for the sheriff's office. And what the posse does is that is involved in providing medical and rescue services into wilderness and backcountry area, in addition to taking care of the lakes and the rivers. So in the summer, we are just inundated with wrecks, fights, drownings, boat wrecks, quad accidents, climbing accidents. So again, a lot of good opportunity to do some backcountry all on your own type of experiences here. And our new EMTs in the Phoenix area don't have a lot of chance to volunteer. So to bring in a brand new EMT and say, oh, by the way, there's only two guys working and you're one of them, and the other guy's going to be on the south end, it's a good way to really develop those skills that otherwise you just don't get to use in a urban setting.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. It's funny. I talk to a lot of urban medics who are like, oh, you guys out in the sticks, you don't have any chance to practice your skills as much as we do. We get stabbings and gunshot wounds and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, try to have you guys get to dump your patients off at the hospital 10 minutes after you pick them up. How'd you like to have a patient for a half hour, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and you're the only person that is responsible for their care? And
yeah, how would you like to stay overnight?
Yeah. Well, and that's interesting because you guys, have that experience of the wilderness EMS and the austere environment care that where you really have to think outside the box. You have to really think more like almost a nurse, really, with that long-term care approach. You know, the EMS, we're taught to worry about the first hour or so of the patient's care, maybe longer if we're in a rural setting. Whereas, you know, when I went to nursing school, I realized that this care window extended throughout the patient's life. And certainly in the long term for days. So it's interesting how you guys have really adapted that to this book.
Yes.
So
we had lots of fun with this because, you know, nobody really wants to sit down and read 14 hours of, your medical call.
Right.
So we kind of got to do it in a fun way, where we put in obstetrics, we put in gunshot wounds, and, Tony being in law enforcement, he got to put in gunfights. It was fun.
Yeah, and that's what I really like about it is that, I really look forward to reading books by healthcare professionals because we provide a more realistic view of what happens in medical care. When I teach ACLS or teach a CPR class or something like that, I constantly tease people and say, ask them this question: what's the only rhythm you can shock only on television?
Yes,
and you probably know the answer to that question.
Right,
asystole. It's asystole, right? You know, and so I always jump in with that because I know it grinds on everybody else's nerves as much as it does mine. So it's great to read a book by people who know what they're talking about. But what spurred you to actually jump in and say, let's write a novel together?
You know, I think we have our egos are too big. You read a book and you go, I can do that. No problem, I can do that. Well, you know, after a lot of time trying to teach yourself how to do it, you can do that. You know?
People ask us how long it took to write the book, and we always joke 1 year to write, or 1 year to learn how to write, 1 year to write it.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how long it takes. I mean, it's not just, you can maybe get that first draft banged out relatively quickly, and by quickly, I mean in maybe a month and a half or so, maybe quicker. But then... it's the rewrites and the fixing the story arc and all of those things that go into really writing a really good book. And I think you guys have accomplished that.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. But, and here's the other thing. As you know, as a writer yourself, you always hope to improve over what you did last time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this constant trying to learn and then, I learned that, but I didn't implement it. I need to go back and I need to do that. So there's just a constant struggle and attempt to improve what your craft and your ability to write something that people really enjoy reading.
So you've got a book. Kelly's the main character, the nurse that
yep.
tries to get out when the electromagnetic pulse strikes. And along the way, she picks up a sheriff's deputy in need along the way that is wounded and needs assistance. And together, the two of them kind of gather this group together to survive following this apocalyptic event.
Right. And, so we kind of start in town and then go through the initial recognition that the electric's out and probably is not coming back. And then we have to make our way to somewhere there where there aren't 4 million other people, mm-hmm. which is the city of Phoenix.
One of the things, we talk about this starting with an electrical magnetic pulse. And, for those that don't know, what this is about is you lose your electrical power grid and a lot of your devices from a nuclear weapon that's exploded high in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. What that does is it sends out a pulse of
highly charged energy. Electric,
yeah, of ions, and that takes out the power grid and other things. When we wrote our book, we wrote it so that all electrical stuff stopped. Now, that's probably not realistic, but you know what? It makes my decisions as a writer a lot easier instead of trying to decide what thing can miraculously work when I need it to and what thing can't work when it's best for them. Story.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. You have to take some artistic license. I mean, in my books, they're set in a paranormal urban world, much like our own, except that the creatures of myth and legend live alongside us. So, and these are paramedics whose sole job is to provide care to werewolves, vampires, mummies, fairies, elves. You name it.
You bet.
And so I had a lot of fun doing the same thing, which was, look, you're going to suspend your disbelief. You're not going to ask me a lot of questions. Everything's going to be as medically sound as I can make it. But there's a story and there's other things going on, and I want you to enjoy it along the way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, the fun part with us is, since our book is in a local environment, we did a lot of playing with places and place names and whatnot. So the book starts in a hospital where Nancy and I both worked out of.
That no longer exists.
Right.
and then we go to places. I'm a deputy constable here in the county. I still work hand in hand with the sheriff's office and whatnot, and I know those folks. And one of my deputy friends was reading the draft of the book, and they talk about going into a small town called Fountain Hills. And he says, "I knew exactly where I was. I knew that store. I know those places." And for the local folks, that's a lot of fun because they get to see that up front. And then we do a lot of playing with names. If you're a local person, you'll recognize family names,
mm-hmm.
In the appropriate place. You'll recognize the puns on names and that sort of stuff. And it's really less for the reader.
But we did
us.
A lot of medical names, too. A lot of our characters are named after the medical conditions that they have.
Oh, that's great.
So, you'll see that our diabetics are named after, the founder of insulin.
Right.
And the people with CHF are named after the person that made the first, mechanical heart. And so it's kind of fun that way, too, to figure out why we named characters the way we did.
So what's next? I mean, you've got this book. It's been out for, about a year, a little over a year, I guess. And
yep, sequel's coming up.
Excellent. When do you have a date planned? Do you think you know when it's
going to
be done?
Oh, we don't have a date. We're not professional writers, mm-hmm. in that we don't do it full time. So both having jobs and children and grandchildren, it's hard to get in enough time to write as much as we'd like.
Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to that. Do you have a working title for the next book?
No.
Okay.
Postgrid 2.
Postgrid 2. So I urge everybody to check it out. It's a great book. I'm about halfway through and enjoying myself reading it. Thank you very much for the complimentary copy of the book. I really enjoy it. So I'm going to make sure I link to it in the book. But is there any place particular you'd like people to go to find out more information about the book or where they can purchase it?
On Amazon.com. It comes in Kindle Unlimited, Kindle, and paperback.
Excellent.
And so all of our marketing goes right to Amazon. The other thing is we have information on our Facebook page, Facebook Postgrid. So we put up interesting articles. We have an interesting article right now on the efficacy of ACLS drugs. Really interesting. Shows very little difference between administering drugs and not administering drugs.
Believe me, I follow that stuff very closely.
And
you're right.
So Amazon and Facebook.
Yeah, I think our problem with the ACLS stuff is that we're old enough in the system to know that we've been through this cycle before.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys remember bicarb, you know, just routinely being
this, oh yeah.
Right. I mean, let's push it. And now we would never think about it. And you tell people that, you know, we used to push bicarb like it was candy. And they'd be like, well, why would you do that? And, well, we didn't, you know, why do we do some of the things we still do?
That's right.
That's a question to ask. So that's great. So we'll look for the site on Facebook, and I'll have links to that. And we'll also have links to the book on Amazon. I urge people to check it out. It's a great read. And we'll stand by for PostGrid 2. Do me a favor, guys. When you have PostGrid 2 out, please reach out to me. I'd love to have you back on the show.
Okay.
You bet.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle PodMedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/PodMedic or Facebook at facebook.com/PodMedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.